Ascent Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents The User Experience, Team of One, Second Edition, a Research and Design Survival Guide, by Leah Bewley and Joe Natoli. Foreword by Jesse James Garrett. Narrated by Marnie Young. Publisher's Note: In this audio edition, you will hear references to figures present in the print and ebook formats of the book. How to use this book. Who should listen to this book? While many people are attracted to the field of user experience because they want to be champions for users, being passionate about advocating for users isn't nearly enough to guarantee that you'll be a successful user experience team of one. UX teams of one certainly are people who love and advocate for users. But they also make sure that designs get tested, business people's questions are answered, design problems receive an appropriate amount of creative exploration, UX specifications are implemented according to plan, the product is continually monitored and improved upon, and support for UX is ever-growing. They do all of that without a roadmap or a blueprint, and they don't do it alone. They cannot succeed in bringing better user experiences into the world without the help of a much larger cast of people in very different roles, who may or may not be active supporters of UX themselves. This book is for anyone who is interested in taking on the challenging and rewarding work of spreading a user-centered mindset to places where it's never been before. Because as ubiquitous as the term UX seems to be these days, as you'll see, we still have a long way to go. This book is intended to be approachable for anyone. Maybe you're new to UX and product design altogether. Maybe you're already working on product teams in another role but are interested in transitioning into the field of UX. Or you might be an experienced practitioner seeking ways to work more effectively within a cross-functional team. Whatever the case may be, we're confident that you'll find practical, actionable, and useful information, as well as advice and methods that will serve to get you to wherever it is you're headed. What's in this book? The User Experience Team of One ethos is equal parts philosophy and practice. It focuses on having the right attitude, seeking out opportunities, being patient and inclusive, and doing the best work you can. Between philosophy and practice, we'll cover not just the guiding principles, but also the nuts and bolts of how to successfully run a UX project as a team of one. Accordingly, this book is organized into two parts. Part one is philosophy, and part two is practice. Part one, philosophy, is a frank walkthrough of the UX team of one's concerns, from start to finish. In this section, we'll explain what it means to be a UX team of one, how to establish a successful foundation, and how to involve others and build support for UX along the way. Chapter 1, UX 101, gives an overview of what UX is, how it came to be, and what it takes to be a UX practitioner. Chapter 2, Getting Started, focuses on how to begin, including the fundamentals of user research and design for the new and aspiring UX team of one. Chapter 3, Building Support for Your Work, addresses some of the most challenging parts of life as a team of one, how to build support and do great work in spite of real-world organizational and interpersonal constraints. In Part 2, Practice, we'll focus on the nuts and bolts of user experience work. This half of the book is intended to function as a ready reference, full of practical methods that have been selected and, in some cases, adapted to fit the realities of a UX team of one situation. What is this reality, you ask? Well, most importantly, teams of one must rely heavily on their non-UX colleagues to help them get work done. That means there's a preference here for methods that can be done in a rapid, rough fashion, and an even greater bias toward methods that invite collaboration and cross-functional participation. In some cases, these methods may already be familiar to you, but our approach and tips are adapted for the work of a team of one. Chapter 4, Planning and Discovery Methods, helps you set up a UX project for success. It includes planning and discovery of the team's requirements and expectations. It also covers techniques for establishing a shared UX strategy with the team. Chapter 5, Research Methods, as the title implies, is all about research. This includes research with users, the centerpiece of a UX practice, as well as research into competitors and best practices. Chapter 6, Design Methods, covers methods and techniques for inclusive and participatory user experience design. Chapter 7, Testing and Validation Methods, provides methods for validating that your strategy, research, and design work has led you in the right direction. Chapter 8, Evangelism Methods, brings our discussion of philosophy and practice full circle and finishes up with approaches for building support and awareness of UX throughout your organization. Chapter 9, Growing Yourself and Your Career, is a blueprint for thriving and flourishing as you grow yourself and your career in user experience. Chapter 10, What's Next, closes with a personal challenge for you to think critically about where you're taking your work in UX and how it aligns with the growth of the field overall. Parts 1 and 2 are heavily cross-referenced, so methods that are described in detail in Part 2 are explained in context in Part 1 and vice versa. This book is designed so that you can dip in and out as needed when you face a specific challenge or are working at a particular point in a project. That said, listening to Part 1 from start to finish will give you a sense of the common growth path for a UX team of one, and listening to Part 2 sequentially will give you a complete plan for how to run a UX project. What comes with this book? This book's companion website, rosenfeld.com/books/the-user-experience-team-of-second-edition/, contains a blog and additional content. The book's diagrams and other illustrations are available under a Creative Commons license, when possible, for you to download and include in your own presentations. You can find these on Flickr at flickr.com/photos/rosenfeldmedia/sets/. Frequently Asked Questions. What is a user experience team of one? A UX team of one is someone who works in a situation where they're the key person advocating for a user-centered product design philosophy. If you're the only person in your company practicing, or aspiring to practice, user-centered design with little to no support, you are most definitely a UX team of one. However, even in organizations with multiple UX professionals, you may find yourself part of a team where you are the only UX person, which makes you an honorary member of the UX Team of One Club. Chapter 3 explains the kinds of challenges that UX teams of one commonly face and explains what to do about them. I'm a freelancer. Is this book for me? The User Experience Team of One Second Edition focuses primarily on people working in or with organizations. But while it's not explicitly geared toward freelancers, consultants, or contractors, much of this book is still very relevant for independents, because they too must often work with the cross-functional teams of their clients. And if you are considering going out on your own, be sure to check out the section Going Independent in Chapter 9. What's different about life as a UX team of one? Working without the support of colleagues in the same profession or without a high degree of UX maturity inside your organization presents several unique challenges. You feel like a jack of all trades, but master of none. You do a variety of work, probably some design, some research, some writing, some testing, and some evangelism. You care about your work, and you want to do it well. But being a generalist, you likely feel as if you're being spread increasingly thin. You may also wonder at times if you're doing it right, or why all these techniques you read about every day on social media don't seem possible in your environment. You need to evangelize or justify. You probably work with or for an organization that doesn't yet get it. They haven't fully bought into the value and purpose of UX. Or, even if they do value user experience, they may not be in a position to fully fund and build a robust UX practice. Either way, this means that in addition to your daily workload, you're constantly tasked with fighting for the UX improvements you propose, as well as trying to influence and increase the UX maturity of the organization as a whole. That's a pretty tall order. You're learning on the job. You don't have anyone to turn to for advice, so you need to figure out how to do your work on your own. You may have UX or product design professionals on social media or professional communities that you can turn to for peer-to-peer advice. But in your day-to-day work, you're on your own. Quite often, the best you can do is make an educated guess, and then trust and defend your hunches as to the best next steps. You're working with severely constrained resources. The biggest challenge for teams of one is time. There's enough work on any given day to keep an entire team of UX folks busy, but there's only one of you. You're charting your own course. No one in your organization has done this before, so you're figuring out your own career path without a guide or a manual to follow, trying to build the airplane as you fly it. What makes this role interesting is the dramatic tension between needing to inspire through expertise and trying to build your own expertise at the same time. That dynamic means you have a very unique set of challenges that go well beyond simply trying to do good UX or product design work. It makes skills like facilitation, flexibility, assertiveness, and persuasiveness central to the team of one's toolkit. This tension requires both practical and philosophical considerations, and that simple fact is the inspiration for this book. Chapters 2 and 3 explain the working conditions that a team of one often experiences, while chapters 4 through 9 provide specific methods that are optimized for those challenging working conditions. Is this just an intro to a UX book? Yes and no. While this book is intended to be accessible to people who are just starting out in user experience, we believe the advice and techniques here apply equally to seasoned practitioners. For example, Chapter 1 provides an overview of user experience and can serve as a basic introduction to the field. But the methods in Chapters 4 through 9 aren't the same typical UX methods you see, read, and hear about every day. We've chosen them specifically because of their power to educate and involve others who may not be familiar with or supportive of user-centered design, while requiring less time and fewer resources than their more formal counterparts. Foreword. Jack of all trades, master of none. English expression, circa 17th through 18th century. I've never much cared for this phrase. It seems to carry the scent of a warning, either to the earnest young Jacks and Jills eagerly surfing from interest to interest, or, more likely, to their hiring managers, investing in breadth sacrifices depth. But in the world of design, and especially in the unique world of the user experience team of one, the creative professionals who thrive are the ones who can work without blinders on. Being able to see the big picture, to draw the connections others don't, means going broad. Specialization is for insects. Robert A. Heinlein's character, Lazarus Long, in Time Enough for Love, 1973. Specialization is brittle. Specialization is highly optimized for specific circumstances. Specialization makes extensive assumptions about the problem at hand, the context in which it must be solved, and the characteristics of a viable solution. Specialization, sooner or later, eventually meets its own exceptions. The team of one doesn't have the luxury of brittleness. The team of one must flex with the ever-fluid requirements of the role. So, if we are to embrace possibility, if we are to embrace potential, we must also reject specialization. Specialization comes with boundaries, comes with a leash. Inherent in our rejection of specialization, then, is a necessary refusal to be boxed in, a refusal to place constraints on what you can bring or limits on what you can accomplish, to be bold, to engage fully and without reservation, and not to stay in your lane. When all you have is a hammer, everything looks like a nail. Paraphrased from Abraham Maslow, The Psychology of Science, 1966. An important idea underlying Maslow's famous hammer is the notion that what we do affects what we see, and therefore what we can see. Different ways of doing things instill in us different ways of seeing. Every tool is also a lens. A collector of tools must also be a curator of a great toolkit. The hidden acumen of knowing which tool to choose in the moment and why is what a generalist can bring that no specialist ever will. True wisdom comes when you can choose a tool not just for what it allows you to do, but for the possibilities it allows you to see. It's dangerous to go alone. Take this. Takashi Tezuka, The Legend of Zelda, 1986. So, let's all celebrate the generalist, the can-do problem solver who single-handedly... What's that you say? What do you mean you're not ready? Oh, right. The tools, the lenses, the resources to do the job, or jobs. That's where Leah and Joe come in. This book is the toolkit and the roadmap and the warm fire to pull up to for reassurance and direction when you're lost and confused in the dark. The unease and uncertainty are part of it, too. You can't move toward the new without also facing the unknown. But you have resources. Right here. You have tools. You have guidance. Use them well. Jesse James Garrett, Oakland, California, May 2024. What's changed? A note from Joe. The first edition of this book appeared in 2013, and more than a decade later, UX practitioners still praise its usefulness, usability, and value. Many report that Leah's book served as an indispensable guide in the earliest stages of their careers, and that they still routinely return to it for that same guidance. At the same time, the practice of UX has changed quite significantly since the book's inception, as has the business landscape it calls home. And, in all honesty, that change has occurred faster and has been more far-reaching than any of us could ever have predicted. Like so many people in other tech-driven professions, which at this point is all of them, the pressure to do a whole lot more with a whole lot less has intensified at the same pace. And, in all honesty, too many of the prescribed, tried-and-true methods for UX improvement require far more time, effort, and resources than management is willing to entertain. And yet, these same methods are still held up as best practices, still taught at universities and boot camps, still suggested in countless courses, articles, and videos, despite overwhelming evidence that they just don't work. Which brings us to this second edition and my involvement. The challenge at hand was to bring the simple, effective principles and practices that Leah had introduced up to date and retire a few that simply had outlived their usefulness. The goal for this new edition was also to address the often difficult situations practitioners find themselves in. For example, the struggle to do good work in corporate environments where speed and urgency routinely trump importance or value. Not to mention the increasing need for UX practitioners to be generalists, executing across multiple areas of the discipline at a very high level. I wanted to offer encouragement instead of cynicism, but still be 100% real about the challenges that practitioners should expect and prepare themselves for. And above all else, I wanted to keep the spirit of Leah's work intact, as a voice who cared enough to communicate with people in a clear, down-to-earth manner that felt kind, generous, and personal. I believe that mission has been accomplished. Leah and I truly hope you find this book useful. Introduction. In June 2011, which feels like forever ago, this message appeared on the Interaction Designers Association, ICSDA, discussion list. I'm at a point in my life where I know I want to do UX design after doing web design for so long, and then reading about usability testing, etc., 6 years ago. But my issue is I'm tired of working for organizations who say they care about their customer, but don't do testing to even know what their customers want from them. I'm kind of fed up with working for people who don't get it. This frustrated plea perfectly summed up the challenge that many passionate user experience professionals still face today, so many years later. As far as we seem to have come, at a time when it seems UX is indeed a household name, many organizations still either have only a modest understanding of user experience or none at all. In either environment, if you are the key person driving for a more user-centered way of working, you are a user experience team of one. And that's true whether it's your official job title or not. But this is about more than just professional frustration. While this book is intended to be a practical resource for people who do user experience design without the support of a large UX team, we'll tip our hand right here at the beginning and confess something. We firmly believe that being a UX team of one is much more than just a job. It's also a critically important avenue for doing good in the world. The UX team of one is as much a professional circumstance as a constructive philosophy, and here are its founding principles. UX is a force for good. In an increasingly technological world, designing products with real people in mind helps you make sure that technology integrates in your life in a human-centered, ethically responsible way. It's a voice of reason, arguing that products and technology can support and even enrich our collective, fundamental humanity. And finally, it's a responsibility to be ever vigilant in watching for ways in which the technology you help bring into the world can be used to harm people instead of helping them. The world needs more of it. As the boundaries continue to blur between the technological and analog worlds, everything that you buy, use, and do will need this user-centered perspective. Companies that never thought of themselves as being in the user experience business before will realize that they are now. We all are. And with the rapid advance of powerful, cutting-edge technology like AI, VR, and AR, this field, and all the ways it shapes and influences the tech that increasingly runs our lives, can only grow exponentially. You can make that happen. Yes, you, the person listening to this book right now, whatever your job title, whatever your career aspirations, you have it in your power to increase awareness of and respect for the user's perspective in the work that you do and with the people that you work with. This book can help you spread knowledge and understanding of the power of good product design and user experience, one person, one team, and one company at a time. And what you'll find is that once people get it, those first moments of discovery about UX can often feel like a revelation. To many who end up becoming UX practitioners, it feels as if they've finally found their calling. The weight of that moment and the passion it ignites makes these crossovers enthusiastic ambassadors for user experience. And, of course, your humble authors have stories of their own, which made them equally passionate about this discipline and all it is capable of. The spark that started the career of many seasoned UX professionals, just like us, was simply seeing an opportunity to improve something and seizing it. Leah's crossover story. Here's how I discovered UX. When I was growing up, I always wanted to be a writer. When I graduated from college, I got a job in what seemed like the most logical field, working at a magazine. The trouble was, I kept nodding off over my copy editing. There was one part of my job that I loved, however, and that was updating the website. I had picked up some rudimentary HTML skills in college, Soon I found that my favorite part of each week was the time I got to spend on the website. So I decided to take the leap and look for a job making websites full-time. It was the early web tech bubble, and HTML skills, even rudimentary ones, were in high demand. I tinkered around as a front-end coder for a few years, but couldn't shake the growing conviction that I would really rather be doing what those people with that funny title, information architect, were doing. Not writing code, but thinking about things from the human perspective and designing systems that were intuitive. So I went back to school to study information architecture. While I was working on my master's degree, I took what I now realize was my first team of one gig. My title was tools developer for a small company that helped law firms manage all the data that they have to keep track of when companies filed for bankruptcy. Glamorous stuff. They hired me presumably because of my technical skills, but they liked and benefited from the fact that I was interested in design and usability too. It was a good training ground because they had a lot of funky, homegrown applications that needed plenty of UX help. It was a great place to test out the principles I was learning in school. I designed a slew of software interfaces. I spent time thinking about solutions for navigating large repositories of information. I conducted usability tests. It also exposed me to the challenges of getting people to prioritize user needs and design when there were so many other fundamental and urgent business issues to be addressed. And finally, it was where I learned the hard lesson that not all companies need or are ready for their team of one. That's okay. Eventually, I knew it was time to move on. What I learned there, I put to good use in my next job as another team of one. So, what skills and experiences got me on the path? Just a handful. Familiarity with the concept of user experience. Interest in how people think, understand, and see. A little bit of technical know-how. An opportune environment to tinker and practice. Just enough education to fuel my experiments. Joe's crossover story. I had artistic talent from the time I was old enough to hold a crayon, and I drew on anything that didn't move, including school tests. I grew up in a very small town in Ohio that you could drive through in 3 minutes, which is a tough place for a sensitive artist to grow up in. But where this all started for me was a meeting with my high school guidance counselor when I was about to graduate. I went to this guy and said, "I want to do something art-related with my life." He looked me straight in the eyes and suggested I join the army. He said people like me are better off taking orders from other people. Again, this is a small town, so to him, I'm just another useless dreamer. I said some very bad words, stormed out of his office, and decided I'd figure it out myself. I found graphic design in the Kent State University catalog and took a shot at the program. It sounded creative, and it sounded like something I could get a job doing. Kent's program was extremely tough and rigorous. Both a sophomore and junior review determined whether or not you could go on in the program. If you failed, they suggested you find another career. My great stroke of luck being there, though, was that the emphasis was on design as a problem-solving discipline, on human cognition and expectation, and while user experience wasn't a thing yet, the questions we were taught to ask were UX questions. Does this communicate to the intended audience? Does it meet their expectations? Does it motivate them or help them to act? Is it helping or hurting in terms of their ability to get what they need? In other words, all the tenets of UX that we know now were there. But at the time, we just called it design. Anyway, I graduated with a degree in graphic design. I worked at an agency the last 2 years of my college tenure, which was invaluable on-the-job learning. I bounced around a few design and ad agencies, and then this thing called the Internet happened. I couldn't convince the old men who ran the agency I worked at that it wasn't a passing fad or trend, and that we needed to get into this work. They thought I was crazy. So I jumped ship and started my own experience design firm. It was the Wild West then. Nobody knew anything about designing or building for the web because it was all so new. So we said yes to every
Sample complete. Ready to continue?